many Unitarian Universalists add a clarifying description to their faith. There are UU Buddhists, UU Humanists, UU Pagans, UU Jews or Muslims or Christians, and so forth. I've always been content to just be a UU until I went to seminary and found out I was a UU religious naturalist. I didn't discover something new or convert. I just learned that there was an articulation for what I already was. I suspect many of you might be UU religious naturalist and just not know there is a language for your orientation. I think the fastest way to understand religious naturalism is the simple definition that there is nothing outside of nature. In other words, there is no supernatural. Everything is within nature. Like Unitarian Universalism, religious naturalism is a big umbrella. Because we place religious authority with the individual, there are as many ways to be a UU or a religious naturalist as there are people practicing. There are theist and non-theist religious naturalists, but even if you embrace theism in religious naturalism, remember that the concept of deity would have to be inside of nature and not outside of it. Some religious naturalists think of God as some sort of process in the universe. Others think of God as the totality of the universe considered religiously. And still other religious naturalists do not consider the notion of God to be a useful concept. The creation story of religious naturalism is the Big Bang and evolution, and it has been dubbed everybody's story. The early stages of life and evolution provide a rich set of realities and metaphors for religious naturalists. Biology is especially useful for understanding this story. I am not well-versed, but I can paint a picture for you with a broad brush, or at least Wikipedia can. Don't mentally check out now, because the whole sermon hinges on this. The Wikipedia article says, a unicellular organism, also known as a single-cell organism, is an organism that consists of only one cell, unlike a multicellular organism that consists of more than one cell. So far, so good, right? Unicellular organisms fall into two general categories, prokaryotic organisms and eukaryotic organisms. Prokaryotes include bacteria. Many eukaryotes are multicellular, but include a few unicellular organisms. Unicellular organisms are thought to be the oldest form of life, with early protocells possibly emerging 3.8 to 4 billion years ago. Although some prokaryotes live in colonies, they do not specialize into cells with differing functions. These organisms live together, and each cell must carry out all life processes to survive. In contrast, even the simplest multicellular organisms have cells that depend on each other to survive. Okay, so the exciting part is that you had all these unicellular bacteria that emerged from non-life, and that bacteria started interacting with one another, and new things emerged. At first, there was just bacteria, and that was the way the world was. But in those bacteria, there was possibility, and that possibility began to be realized. These little unicellular beasties began to combine and change and specialize. They began to be able to replicate or carry out a particular function or carry a bit of code. They specialized, they interacted, they replicated. Evolution was underway. The other super cool thing that they were able was that they were able to value one thing over another, turning toward or away from different choices, much the way a plant might turn toward the light. This might be the origin of consciousness and imagination. Because of the ability of these unicellular bacteria to combine, specialize, replicate, and value, possibility just explodes. And all that combining and specializing and valuing of bacteria eventually leads to bighorn sheep, lark buntings, milkweed, and a group of Unitarian Universalists and their friends sitting in Lafayette, thinking in metaphors and awash in beautiful possibility. Isn't that astonishing? This is one of the core tenets of religious naturalism, something else from nothing but. From those little unicellular bacteria comes the amazing, awe-inspiring diversity and the abundance of life on Earth. Something else from nothing but. All life from a common ancestor, the unicellular bacteria. Similarly, religious naturalists are captivated by emergence. Emergence is when the sum is greater than the parts. You have a bike and you have a person, but when you combine them, you get forward motion. There is so much possibility in these ideas. Another central tenet of religious naturalism is that from the moment those bacteria begin to group and or combine, all evolution happens in relationship. Everything becomes in relationship. There is nothing without relationship. This idea is especially important to our faith tradition, which is grounded in covenant. Nothing happens outside of relationship. Think about this in terms of our seventh principle. We are part of an interdependent web, a web that has been interdependent for at least 4 billion years. Lately, I've been entertaining the idea that there is no external perfection, no heaven, no nirvana, no master plan. That instead, all of life, all of the universe, all of everything is in the process of becoming. Everything is evolving, and the possibilities are endless because nobody knows exactly where this thing is headed. And the reason we don't know exactly is we can't know what relationships are going to form. To be sure, there are constraints. The constraints are almost as intriguing as the possibilities. It's like poetry. A poem isn't finished when you have put everything in. It is finished when you have taken out everything you possibly can. Within those constraints, something new and elegant is created. The reason that this is important to my theology is that I think it matters what we put into our relationships. You know the computer adage, garbage in, garbage out, or GIGO? Well, I think that is true for the world we are helping to create as well. Beauty in, beauty out, or BIBO, or love in, love out. Make no mistake, we are a very, very small part of the cosmos. This is not some pat prosperity, there we go, not some pat prosperity gospel. What we put in is minute, but there is possibility in doing our part. Perhaps our wee nudge will at least shape what love is going to become. And I think we have something to do with beauty as well. Another intriguing idea is that relationships and their effect on the interdependent web zoom in and out. We started small with bacteria. Let's think larger, say human societies. We are entering a new geological age, tentatively dubbed the Anthropocene. We have been living in the Holocene, living being the key term. The Holocene is just right for supporting life. The Anthropocene is a name given to a geological age caused by human activity. Some prefer the term capital scene, since capitalism has been made possible by fossil fuels. It has been pointed out that by causing climate change and suffering the consequences, humans are being forced to acknowledge that they are not separate from or above the rest of nature. They are being forced to come to terms with an inescapable reality that they are part of the interdependent web. While there is so much sorrow in climate change, perhaps this tardy recognition also brings possibility and a shift in our relationship with other life. I use the example of climate change, as extreme as it is, to make the point that human systems affect the natural world. The way we organize ourselves matters, and we are in turn affected. Everything happens in relationship. What other possibilities can we see? For one, if there is no external perfection, no out there perfection, I think that can have repercussions for our individual lives. I think many of us spend a great deal of time feeling not good enough. We never feel like we measure up. How often have you heard someone tell you to quit comparing yourself to someone else? But your inner critic may argue that there is some standard you need to reach before you can actually be good enough. What if you shift your thinking to realize instead that you are always becoming? You will be becoming until the end of your life. There isn't any perfection to arrive at, just evolution. You are an unfolding possibility. Another possibility I see is inclusion. We center ways of being all the time. In the United States, our norms are being white, male, Christian, US-born, cisgender, and straight. Every other perspective struggles for room at the table. What could be possible if we stop seeing majority as normative? Theologian Michael Hoge uses the metaphor of a stir fry. He likes this better than the mash of the melting pot. He says, in a stir fry, all the different ingredients retain their own shape and flavor, and all the flavors enhance one another. Instead of holding up the beauty of one idealized standard we all must try to conform to, this is the beauty of contrast. What possibilities are present for us if we learn to embrace a beauty of contrast, to delight in difference? Possibility is also present in the way we love. Our families of origin, however constructed, taught us what we know, for better or worse, about love. We take what we have learned out into the world to connect with other people. Then we spend the rest of our lives in dialogue with what other people have learned about love. The possibility lies in holding what we know lightly and being curious about what other people know and letting love evolve into something new. We do this on a larger scale when we make a congregation. All of us have come together with what we know, and we are now in dialogue with a whole bunch of people. We try to figure out what love could be by committing to covenant. Again, the possibility lies in being curious rather than convicted. There is just a small chance that you are reacting out of the lessons of your past rather than responding to something. The more aware we can be of why things push our buttons and slow down to wonder if there might be another way to understand what is going on, the more we can grow in covenant. Something marvelous might emerge. Circling back now to the origin story and using what we know so far, it seems like our interdependent web has been becoming for almost 14 billion years. We began as clouds of primordial elements, mostly hydrogen, helium, and lithium. Those elements began to coalesce through gravity, eventually forming early stars and galaxies. Think about the extraordinary variety that has emerged from those initial elements. There have been, as far as we know, no new elements introduced to our planet for a long time. Yet those initial elements eventually organized into bacteria, the common ancestor of all life on Earth. Remember that from those little unicellular creatures came the stunning diversity of life on Earth. That concept of emergence and something else from nothing but are perhaps the most exciting news of religious naturalism. This is where I find hope. We cannot be certain of the future because new relationships are forming all the time. We don't know what is going to emerge. I can't tell you what movie anymore, or if I remember it correctly, but I often think back to a scene I remember where a woman whose children have recently left the nest is out jogging one day. She discovers a baby in the bushes. She brings the baby home intending to raise the child. Her husband is not so readily convinced. After talking a while, he tells her, "I'm going to bed. I have a headache." And she says, "No, you don't. Because this is a miracle, and a headache is an inappropriate response to a miracle." We live in a miracle, in a world filled with beauty, awe, wonder, and love, in a world with otters and a riot of color, in a world of imagination and poetry and music. And all this from a handful of elements. We live in a world of beautiful possibility. Aren't we lucky? So often on a Sunday, I'm torn between attending dirt church and community church. So today, if we could lower the lights, I thought I would mash up those things with a meditation.